The following program is sponsored by Friends of Life Outreach International.
I come home from Afghanistan, having to be just intense, very focused on my job, to come home and now have to be a husband and a father. And that was, my home was not a safe or happy place for my family at all. It was a raging lunatic. I would really just, to be that person in Afghanistan and to come back and try to fit in my home wasn't a switch that I could flip.
PTSD nearly destroyed their marriage. But Chad and Kathy Robichaux now share how there's hope for those seeking help. Next.
Well, I want to welcome you to life today. James and Betty, we just share life every day. And I know we've not been hugging for a long time, we're trying to be wise, and we'll continue to be, but here's the deal. Sometimes you just wish you could get your arms around people you are grateful for. I've been saying to all of you who watch life today that if the family of God will be healthy, the body of Christ, we can put God's arms around the people he gave his son to redeem. And his love is all that's going to change things. His love, unconditional love, and truth delivered in that love. If I could get my arms around the people that my guests today reach out to and represent, I'd do it. And that's all of our military and their families. There is no way to thank you enough. Just like all the first responders, you march into hell. You run into hell for a heavenly cause, for freedom. And I just want to thank you for life. And I wish we could hug everyone in the military. Well, Chad Robichaux and his wife, Kathy, they understand what it is to have an unfair advantage. They understand what it is to have victory in the midst of battle. And they understand the battle, and they understand many people that have really been impacted by it, trying to deliver help to all of us, have not had enough people reaching out to them. And after an incredible journey, they're doing it. I want to just say to you, Kathy, to you, Chad, you Robichaux, you are amazing. And we're going to talk about your ministry, but Chad, and you feel free, Kathy, jump in and carry this thing because you've known him a long time. Mm-hmm. And you probably didn't realize he was going to be such a fighter, but you knew he was tough. But you didn't realize what was happening to him until you began to see it. Just tell us about your childhood. Just sweep us through that. And then how you get into the military. You did, what, 8 tours in the Middle East?
8 to Afghanistan, yes.
Afghanistan. So you really marched into hell. You kind of moved into hell. Yeah. All right, tell us about your journey.
Well, my military background started with my father. My father was a Marine who served in Vietnam. And in fact, we have 2 sons that are both Marines. And one of them actually even served in Afghanistan. And I was a 4th Recon Marine, which is Special Operations in the Marine Corps. I did 8 deployments in that capacity. But when my experience with trauma from the military really started with my father coming home from Vietnam, not getting the help he needed. Many of our Vietnam veterans, you guys are aware, did not get the help they needed. And he was just a very angry, violent man. Lots of alcohol, women, and a lot of physical abuse in our home. So we had a very physically abusive childhood, my brother and I. And my brother was a year older than me. And, during those times, we became close. And people that grew up in dysfunctional homes become very close to each other. And he was the closest person to me. We made a decision when we were about 13 and 14 years old that we were gonna join the military to escape the lifestyle. Mm-hmm. And we started running and swimming and watching videos. And we decided we wanted to be in special operations. Growing up in southern Louisiana, we want to be in the water and swim and do all those things. So I remember about a year into that, us doing that, a tragedy hit our family and my brother was shot and he was killed. Mm-hmm. And it was devastating to me. Somebody is in a childhood like that, in a dysfunctional home, having that close person to them to lose them like that. And then what I had left of a family really disintegrated. My mother, his biological mother, could not handle that. She pretty much lost it. My dad left the country because he didn't want to deal with it, and left me and my older sister to live by ourselves. When I was 7, and I pretty much went into deep isolation until I was 17 years old. Went to a Marine Corps recruiter and I asked them to help me get into Marine Corps and fulfill that childhood dream. I got that second chance at life that the military gives so many people, that clean slate for life. And I wanted to fulfill that childhood dream of being in special operations, being a reconnaissance Marine. And that first year I tried out and I made it and did all the training, the difficult training it takes to do that job. But this was 1993, so it'd be almost 10 years into being in special operations, 10 years of us being married is when the World Trade Center buildings were hit and resulted in me being deployed to Afghanistan. I joined a Joint Special Operations Command Task Force. I did 8 deployments in that capacity. And being in Afghanistan, doing the job that I began to do, the manifestations of frustration and anger is really what we saw first. I come home from Afghanistan having to be just intense, very focused on my job, to come home and now I have to be a husband and a father. And it's always a shame for me to say, especially knowing how many people are probably listening, but it's just necessary for me to say that my home was not a safe or happy place for my family at all. It was a raging lunatic. I would throw things, break things, slam the door, punch holes in the wall, scream at my wife and children. I was just really just, to be that person in Afghanistan and to come back and try to fit in my home wasn't a switch that I could flip. And so it was very difficult for me and obviously very difficult for them. One of my most memories that I can recall to share what it was like, my daughter was having a birthday party and she was so excited for her birthday, and she's very opinionated, and she didn't like the icing on her cake, and something so simple, and I flipped out and picked up my little girl's birthday cake and threw it against the wall and destroyed my little girl's birthday. And I remember in those moments thinking, who behaves that way? What kind of dad behaves that way? And I was just really out of control, so I felt more comfortable being away from them, isolating from them and being in Afghanistan, and I thought it would just get better. But eventually I started having these physical manifestations of these physiological effects. My arms would go numb. My throat felt like it was swelling shut. My face would be numb. Sometimes I felt like I had a 1,000-pound weight on my chest and I couldn't breathe. And this is signs of a panic attack. And then when I would, those symptoms begin to get worse and worse and worse. And I didn't want to tell anybody I worked with because in a little special operations group, I knew the guys would think I was weak. If I went to mental health, I probably would have been taken out of my program. So I pushed it down and kept trying to function. And eventually those symptoms did get worse. In fact, I had what's called disassociation, where you kind of almost like a third person, like you're like in a video game of yourself. Mm-hmm. And then during the end of my time there, we ended up losing 12 team members that were killed. Two of them were Americans, 10 Afghans. Some people may not think that's as big of a deal, but to me, because of my job, I lived in these Afghans' home. I ate dinner with their families, played soccer with their kids. They were my brothers. I love these guys, and they love me, and I would have died for them. And in fact, I believe they died for me. Mm-hmm. And if I was hanging on by a thread in that moment, that thread was broken. And I came home shortly after that, after realizing that the things that I was doing and not asking for help was putting other people in danger, and not just myself. And so when I came home, Kathy and I sat before a clinical psychologist, and I was diagnosed with PTSD, and neither one of us even knew what it was at the time, but to tell you the level of despair like I was in, the only way I really know how to describe it is imagine if you were drowning and you chained at the bottom of a swimming pool, and how desperate would you be for one breath of air? But you never drown, you never die. You're in that level of panic, that state of panic all the time. And on top of that, I was completely ashamed because I felt like I failed at my job. And so, that's when my wife and counselor talked me into getting those wrestling mats and trying to find something to keep me busy.
I don't even think I have to be a Christian or love God very much to just fall in love with the person I'm listening to, even in the midst of your struggle. Because I see a guy that had some real tough times as a kid, but really respected what his dad did, even though things weren't right. Over there, you're just in the middle of hell, that you were able to love the ones that were, you were taught were your enemy, but you brought them over and they began to fight for the same freedom you felt like you were fighting for. You were not only fighting for our freedom, but you actually were fighting for the freedom of the Afghan people. We've been teaching, Franklin Graham and I and others, we've been teaching English to the girls in their schools over for years. I've been supporting mission outreaches just like Franklin does with Samaritan Spurs. So I love these people that have been used. Yeah. So everything you've said, you just caused me to love you. And I see you as a hurting person where you are now. How long did it take you to know something was really drastically wrong when he was coming home? This just simply was not normal.
Yeah, no, it took a while because there was a lot, there was a lot of anger that when we started with in the marriage, it's only because what he had experienced growing up. So the immaturity, the youth in us getting married at 18, 19 years old, and trying to figure it out how to be married was not easy. So that anger in him was something I was kind of used to, and almost in a way, as it would get worse with him dealing with these struggles he was dealing with, it almost made me just feel, I just was so naive to understand that it was something he was going through. I just thought something was wrong with me. Mm-hmm. What am I doing wrong? Where I think maybe a lot of young moms go through that, young wives go through that. What am I doing wrong? So, of course, going through what he's going through and me not really understanding and just having this friction between us, this wall just started to build.
Did you still feel love for him in the midst of it?
Oh, yes. Okay. Yes, I loved him through it. I just got to a point after 3 years of it of just, I didn't know how to do it anymore. I didn't know how to love him through it.
Did you kind of feel like, well, he's been there, he's fought, put that behind you. Now you need to be here and be a husband and a father, and it's a new life for you. Did you find that hard for him to separate the two?
Yeah, it was definitely, that just seemed normal to me. That I don't even know if I ever even thought about it that way, because I did such a, for me, I just knew how to go forward and be the mom, mm-hmm. be the dad of the home, and just take care of everything. So I don't know if I ever completely had that feeling. Maybe there was definitely a desire. I wish that he would put that aside and that he could, you know, be the dad right now. And one thing that worked out really great for him is that my boys love jiu-jitsu. So that was something that they were able to connect with.
And he became a fighter. You were a champion fighter, right?
I was. One of the things that my wife and my counselor tried to do was get me to do something I did my whole life since I was 5 years old, was martial arts. I was already a professional MMA fighter. I was doing it on the side in the military, from the military. And so I just dove into that. Like somebody would dive in a bottle of alcohol or drugs, I dove into that. And I think martial arts is great. And physical activities are great for people struggling with depression, anxiety. But I really abused that. And
You seem pleasant right now. when you put a facade on, then they didn't know what was about to get them. or were you filled with anger back then? Were you like a whole different demeanor?
No, I as a competitor, as a professional fighter, I never allow myself to bring anger in there. I like to be composed. More composed I am, the better I perform.
And that's where I had a hard time at, because he did so well on those mats. And yet at home, he didn't compose himself. He was hurting us at home. And I longed to have that same appreciation or that same kind of attitude at home. But yet if you ask him to, he would turn it around on him. Well, I wish that she was like this, and I wish she was like that. And, you know, we just got to a point of that I wasn't filling his cup, he wasn't filling my cup, and I didn't know how to respond to.
Okay, I've got to move forward here, because I think you're two beautiful people. And I think the beauty that's in you is the love of God and the life of God. And you've started a ministry to the military that have what you had. It had them. It mattered. You're the prisoner, mm-hmm. right? And it's destroying you. It's a horrific, slow death. And it's a death and a torment to everybody around you. It breaks my heart. Boy, you started reaching out. How's that going? And tell us how in the world you got moved into it.
Well, I mean, at the rock bottom of what we said, we went through, we found ourselves facing a divorce, separated, and I found myself alone in an apartment in an attempt to take my life. Mm. Kathy intervened. And on the other side of that journey was some mentorship, restoration with my relationship with Christ, and then a deep burden that God put on my heart to pay forward what I discovered with others. Mm. And so that manifested in taking what we learned and we discovered, essentially the solution to these problems you're talking about, to the 22 suicides a day, to the 80% divorce rate, to the 30% of guys who are being diagnosed with PTSD, a solution to all these problems, which is a relationship with Christ and living the lives He created us to live. We wanted to share that with others, and we started the Mighty Oaks Foundation. That was 10 years ago.
Where'd you get the name?
Isaiah 61, which is the verse that I believe God called us to do this with.
And you're raising them up.
And we're raising them up.
Making them stand and cast a peaceful shadow.
Yeah, that's right.
That's what they do.
That's right. From the ashes to mighty oaks.
I love the part when he explained it to me. I really didn't have trust in Chad yet. It had only been a year of our restoration. And he's reading this to me, and it, every bit of me wanted to say, what are you thinking? But when he read me Isaiah 61, I said, and it will be called Mighty Oaks. Mm-hmm. And that was it.
That's great.
And how long has it been going?
10 years.
And Dave Reaver, who's been here many times, yes. Dave, we love you. Yep. So sorry about saying goodbye to you, sweetheart. Yes. We love you, buddy. Mm-hmm. He's put his arms around a lot of people here and around the world. And he helped you, but you got the foundation, and you are reaching out to these military that have this challenge. If people want to know, and again, I'm trying to cover ground here. We don't have the kind of time frame Oprah and Dr. Phil and some of them have. But if they want to know what you're doing and how they can support it, because we're going to send them a check, we just want you to know that. Where do they go on the website to learn about the Mighty Oaks and how they can be a part of it?
MightyOaksPrograms.org. We do several things. One is resiliency. I've spoken to 150,000 active duty troops around the world at bases on spiritual resiliency. And then we have a recovery program where people come. We have 5 ranches that they come to the program, active duty, veterans, spouses, first responders. We pay for everything, including their travel. And we put 4,000 warriors through the program, and we're doing 1,000 this year.
So that's supported by somebody.
Somebody.
That's what I'm saying. It's not like you got some big business that you're not such a champion fighter now, beating up and being as rich as some of those fighters. So you're fighting for their lives and their future, the website, if they want to help you.
Yeah, we're fighting for their lives, their marriages, their eternities, mm-hmm. and we need help to do it. I mean, it costs us $2,500 every one that we put through.
Mm-hmm. All right, how do they find you online?
MightyOaksPrograms.org.
MightyOaksPrograms.org. Look it up. We'll be sending you a check from life. You know, Betty and I may become your supporters. We try to get arms around everybody. And one of the things that I know, by the way, if you'd like to have the book, you simply help us love some kids that are starving, which I know you'll want to. You are the most amazing audience. I don't have to guard your resources. You're overseers of the resources God's entrusted to you to oversee. And the viewers of Life Today, I think you're the best overseers on the planet. So that's why I'm joyfully sharing this with you, because we want to get our arms around every one of these military people that have been hurt so deeply, trying to help us. Do you get it? Please get it. So go there. Let me just say this to you. Right now, we're feeding 350,000 children a day that we have found. We missionaries planted their lives in the midst of hell to get these kids life and a future and their families. 350,000 of them right now. But we've had a real tragedy come too. The flooding that has occurred in South Sudan and other areas has destroyed our malnutrition clinics, which you've seen many of them. And that's where people go that have not been in the feeding long enough that they got restored. And they go there as a last chance. So we got a lot to ask you to consider right now. We're going to need some big-time help. And I believe with all my heart, Father, I just believe everybody listening is going to say, hey, we're going to help those military families. And we're going to help these children. And we're going to help the malnourished. We're going to be the miracle. In Jesus' name, won't you listen to Isaac Pretorius. 30 years or more now we've been working together to get God's arms around people. And you've been helping us do it. Watch this closely.
Right now, the world's newest country is in peril. After suffering through a grim and tragic year, South Sudan's problems have been even more compounded by record-breaking rainfall. And over 1 million of the South Sudanese people are reeling from the effects of the worst flood in recorded history.
This is truly a crisis of epic proportions. But let me help you understand the real impact on these families, because we say 1 million people. That's a lot of people, that's a lot of families. We say flooding, the worst flooding in recorded history. That sounds incredible. But here's the reality for individual families. These are people who are living, many of them in grass huts, structures created from whatever they can find. Many of them we found actually just living under trees. Before this crisis, they were severely food insecure. Well, now this flood has raged through the area, and what that means is that there's absolutely no food, nothing whatsoever. Many areas that still had some food, their crops have been totally destroyed. Their crops have been destroyed for the next harvest as well. And so the truth is that many children are dying of starvation, literal starvation, no food at all. This has impacted our ability to be able to reach them with food. We've had to use boats, many of our warehouses totally flooded. We've had to use helicopters in some cases at huge expense. Our malnutrition clinics, 16 of them, have been totally destroyed. These are clinics that play a vital role in saving children's lives each and every day. We have to be able to reach these people. We have to be able to sustain our mission feeding efforts. We have to rebuild these malnutrition clinics and ensure that we are able to save these children's lives. Without us, families, whole families that are suffering right now are going to lose their lives because of the impact of this flood.
Wow. I believe you hear God's voice through the missionary, through Isaac, through all those efforts that are going forth from the mission and relief workers. I'm holding here what we call a quiet time bundle. It is well. And the inside, you've got 31 prayers. And then you've got It Is Well hymns about how sufficient God is. The reason I bring this up while we're talking about these children is that there are battles and struggles here, just like the ones that our guests are trying to meet with the love of God by reaching out to others. You are offering the hope that all of us need who've been impacted. I want to ask you right now, if you would, just say, God, show me what you want me to do and you'll enable me to do, and I'll do it. Please understand that we're able to feed 3, 5, or 10 children, not total child care, but save their lives in the feeding programs. 350,000 right now we're feeding every day. And when I say we, it means you, all of us. 33 children for the next months. 55 children, 110 children. But we also need to rebuild these 16 malnutrition clinics. They're over $24,000. We're talking about nearly $400,000 to restore them. What this is, Betty, is when we didn't get them in the feeding programs early enough to stabilize, or we never even found them, or they didn't find the food, we take them to this last effort. And we need to rebuild 16. That's $24,500 a piece. There could be somebody say, I can do it. Well, I don't know what you can do. But I know that if everybody gave $1,000 toward it that's watching now, we'd be on the way. And Betty, I'm just praying that everybody will do it. And we're going to send you some really beautiful gifts. Betty, is this not beautiful?
Oh, I love it.
I wish you could see it, actually. No greater love. I'm telling you something. When you express God's love in action, not just in word, you don't love in word only, but in deed. You talk about transforming power. Would you do that right now? We want to bless you with some gifts that'll inspire you and comfort you. But you're going to be giving people the greatest gift. You're giving them life. Would you right now go online? Would you dial that number that's always there as a prayer line? Would you take your bank card and use it like a check? And then you make the check for what God leads you to make the check out to, or put it on your bank card. Please do it right now. Thank you so much.
Across the continent of Africa, children are suffering, facing severe malnutrition and even death. With food reserves gone and many areas experiencing severe famine, we urgently need to replenish supplies to keep feeding the 350,000 children who are counting on us. Call now with your life-saving gift of $30, $50, or $100 to help feed and care for 3, 5, or 10 children for 3 full months. Also, please consider an extra gift to help immediately rebuild malnutrition clinics destroyed by record flooding in South Sudan. The urgent need is $392,000 above our normal feeding budget and is critical to help save the lives of those who are suffering most. With your gift of any amount, we'll send you It Is Well, Quiet Time Bundle, featuring an instrumental music CD with 12 classic hymns and a 31-day prayer booklet to help renew your soul. With your gift of $100 or more, request the No Greater Love frame print. This portrait is a reminder of our Savior's love and the price that was paid for our salvation. Finally, with your gift of $1,000 or more to help feed and care for 100 children, be sure to request our inspiring bronze sculpture, Divine Servant. Please call, write, or make your gift online today.
I don't know when I've ever felt so moved where I just said, God, please, please, please help the children and their families. God, help Chad and Kathy. Get your arms around the people that made it possible for us to get our arms around our kids and our grandkids. I mean, Chad and all the military, they fought for our grandchildren, 11 of them, and now soon to be 11 great-grandchildren for the freedom. And man, I love you. If you'd like to have his book, and you just say, James, we helped you with some food, you know, would you send us that book too? You better believe it. Maybe you know someone in the military you want to get it to. And then you go back and you see there's the website. And you can even find it on lifetoday.org. But I want you to help them with this Mighty Oaks Foundation. Now, I want to hear great things about it. I want you all to let me know what's going on. And I want you to kind of think about coming back maybe annually and give us a report on what's happening. And I want to know if people watching Life Today started helping you share Life Today.
Yeah.
Because we love both of you. You feel that?
I love that.
Thank you.
God bless you. Keep it up.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chad, for what you've done.
Yes.
Thank you for what you're doing now. The glory of God is on both of you.
Yes, he is.
She's not just pretty. She's got God's grace on her.
Does.
And you're a fighter. But, man, you got the glory of God all over you, Chad. And I love you.
Thank you.
All of you. Thank you for sharing God's grace and his glory. We love you.
You know, we're making the mistake of hoping that America wakes up somehow from this craziness that we're in. We're not going to wake up unless the men of God wake us up.
Life Today is made possible by the supporters of Life Outreach International. Your gift will be used exclusively for the exempt purposes of life. The ministry features specific outreaches as examples of the programs it supports and conducts. Gifts are considered to be without restriction as to use unless explicitly stipulated by the donor. The ministry is a member of the ECFA.